Welcome to day 114 of our 180-day study of the Westminster Standards. We're looking at the fifth commandment and discussing authority. Specifically, we're looking at the civil magistrate, as it's described in Confession of Faith, chapter 23. And today we pick up in section 4 of chapter 23 of the Confession, which reads, "It is the duty of people to pray for magistrates, to honor their persons, to pay them tribute or other dues, to obey their lawful commands, and to be subject to their authority for conscience sake. Infidelity or difference in religion does not make void the magistrate's just and legal authority, nor free the people from their due obedience to them, from which ecclesiastical persons are not exempted, much less has the Pope any power and jurisdiction over them in their dominions or over any of their people, and, least of all, to deprive them of their dominions or lives if he shall judge them to be heretics or upon any other pretense whatsoever." Well, the reference to the Pope is typical of Reformed Protestant thinking in the 1600s. This was written in the 1640s. But there is still a great deal of important and relevant information here in this section of chapter 23. So let's look at each clause, phrase by phrase. And the first clause of this section is, "It is the duty of people to pray for magistrates." 1 Timothy 2:1, "I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty." Second, "It is the duty of people to honor their persons." 1 Peter 2:17, "Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king." "It is the duty of people to pay them tribute or other dues." Romans 13:6, "For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Third, "It is the duty of people to obey their lawful commands and to be subject to their authority for conscience sake." Romans 13:5, "Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake." Titus 3:1, "Put them in mind to be subject to principalities and powers, to obey magistrates, to be ready for every good work." Now, we might point out there, in case you're unfamiliar with that language, principalities and powers, everywhere that word occurs in the New Testament, it refers to demonic entities. Okay, the next section in section 4 of chapter 23 is, "Infidelity or difference in religion does not make void the magistrate's just and legal authority, nor free the people from their due obedience to them." Let's put this in its first century context. It's difficult to know how to assess what the confession says here when we recall that Israel was invaded by the Roman Empire, and nobody today would agree that the Roman Empire, that Italy, had a right or had just and legal authority to invade Israel and put Israel under tribute. However, once you grant that Rome had some right or just and legal authority to invade and conquer Israel and put it under military occupation, then the laws were passed, I suppose, with some just and legal authority. Jesus said, when the Roman soldiers order you to carry their provisions for a mile, you should be willing to carry their provisions for 2 miles. But again, there has to be some sense in which we would say that the Roman Empire had no right to put Israel under military occupation. Nevertheless, 1 Peter 2:13 says, "Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors, as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well." As free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. And as free reminds us of the discussion in Matthew 17, and there's a link to that passage. You can look at it in your spare time. The next phrase in the section, from which ecclesiastical persons are not exempted. Quite a few proof texts here. First, Romans 13:1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, and the powers that be are ordained of God. 1 Kings 2:35, and the king put Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, in his room over the host, and Zadok the priest did the king put in the room of Abiathar. So here is the king over ecclesiastical persons. Acts 25:9 shows Paul, I guess, an ecclesiastical person, not exempted from what Caesar would require. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of those things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. So Paul was not exempt from Caesar. 2 Peter 2:1 and the parallel in Jude 8. 2 Peter 2:1 says, there were false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false prophets among you, who privily shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. But chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness, and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed, they are not afraid to speak evil of dignities. Whereas angels, which are greater in power and might, bring not railing accusation against them before the Lord. The word railing there is the Greek word blasphemous. Jude 8, likewise, also these filthy dreamers defile the flesh, despise dominion, and speak evil of dignities. Yet Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him, the devil, a railing, blasphemous accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke you. But these speak evil of those things which they know not, but what they know naturally as brute beasts, in those things they corrupt themselves. Woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, and ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward, and perished in the gainsaying of Kor. So, we're not to blaspheme even the devil. We're not to blaspheme the devil. And so we're also not to blaspheme the principalities and powers which the devil controls. The final phrase in this section of the confession is, much less has the Pope any power and jurisdiction over them in their dominions, or over any of their people, and least of all to deprive them of their dominions or lives, if he shall judge them to be heretics, or upon any other pretense whatsoever. The proof texts are interesting historically. 2 Thessalonians 2:4, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And Revelation 13:15, and he had the power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Now, when we finish looking at the civil magistrate, we'll be moving to look at the church, the next authority that we'll be considering here under the fifth commandment. And section 4 of that chapter says that the Pope of Rome is not the head of the church, but is that Antichrist, that man of sin, the son of perdition, that exalteth himself in the church against Christ and all that is called God. It was a quite universally held belief in the 1640s, both by Anabaptists on the one hand, and also by the High Church of England, on the other hand, that the Pope was, the papacy, was the Antichrist. Now, most Presbyterians today don't believe that. And this is probably, the chapter in the church there about the papacy being the Antichrist is probably one of the most universally discarded sections of the Westminster Standards. And this phrase right here, it reflects that same thinking. So what can we conclude then from this particular section? First and primarily that even demonic entities deserve a kind of respect, and we don't blaspheme the devil, we don't blaspheme those that are put in place by the devil, the principalities and powers, and so I don't think that we can say that the confession is making the precise claim that, well, I've hinted at in some of my comments before, and that I have provided some links to, that the state, the institution of the civil magistrate, is a demonic institution. But nevertheless, in spite of the fact, whether the confession says that or whether you personally agree with that claim, we all agree that it is the duty of people to pray for magistrates and to obey them and not to resist them. That if, for example, we lived in Afghanistan in a village controlled by the Taliban, and the Taliban ordered us to wear burqas, we would wear burqas, but we would pay the taxes, and we would give them the kind of respect. We wouldn't blaspheme the Taliban any more than we would blaspheme Satan himself. Of course, I think we would have to also agree that it is our ultimate goal, evangelistically speaking, in terms of the Great Commission, through evangelism, to abolish the Taliban. If we lived in a city that was controlled by the mafia and we had to pay protection money, I think the Bible says we should pay what is demanded of us, pay or give to him who asks. But yet it is our ultimate goal, through evangelism, but not through violent revolution or resistance, and not by blasphemy or railing accusations, to abolish the mafia. And in the same way, it was the goal, I believe, of Christians, it was their hope that eventually Roman dominion over Israel would be abolished, not by violent revolution, as the zealots would have had us do, but through evangelism, through the preaching of the gospel, and through conversion. That it is a sin to extort, to engage in violence, and to take people's wealth by force. And yet Jesus says, do not resist evil, do not resist those who attempt to take your money through force, but our goal ultimately is that such people would repent. We'll have some additional links at the bottom of our blog post, and if you'd like to comment on this connection, the idea that we're not to blaspheme Satan or to blaspheme the principalities and powers, but to be subject to the principalities and powers, we can talk about that in the blog posts. Tomorrow, we'll continue looking, as we do in the Fifth Commandment, to the institutions of authority, and we'll be looking at the church.